Hello, and thank you for joining us for Growing America's Roofing Workforce, the podcast where we interview the people working to recruit, train, and retain the future of the roofing industry. I'm John Espenshade with the National Roofing Contractors Association. When discussing how to fund all these workforce development projects we've been talking about, we've only briefly touched on one important aspect of it: where the money comes from, how to get it, and then how to use it. Joining us today are the people who are going to be able to answer those three questions. We have Sherry Miles, president of J.D. Miles Roofing in Norfolk, Virginia. Sherry?
Hi.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. We also have Tammy Hall, director of marketing and business development of CFS Roofing Services, headquartered in Fort Myers. Tammy? Hi. We have Jenny Rodriguez-Vargas, director of HR at Advanced Roofing.
Hi there.
We have Dwayne Musser, VP of Government Relations at NRCA.
Good to be here. Thanks.
And Deb Mazel, Director of Federal Affairs at NRCA and the Commissioner of the Office Fantasy Football League. Deb, thanks for joining us.
One more important than the other, but thanks for having me today.
Couldn't agree more. Anyway, starting with where the sources come from, this is a question for our DC folk. The first two staffers that aren't me to join this podcast. So congratulations on that distinction. Talking about where these funds come from the very, very top, what are the main sources of grant funding to the roofing industry for workforce development?
Thanks, John. And thanks for doing this podcast. It's really important. And it can be very cumbersome and tricky. So hopefully we can kind of spell it out in an easy manner. There are two main sources of federal funding that NRCA tracks in terms of what's most useful to our members, and that's the Perkins Career and Education State Grants, as well as funding available under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So shorthand, we call it Perkins. Shorthand, we call it WIOA. These programs are funded annually by Congress, and although they're relatively small, about $1.4 billion, they do go a long way for state and local career and technical education providers to enhance their programs. NRCA has been really successful in the last few years, even through tough budget environments that are only getting tougher, as you probably can tell by watching the news. We've been successful in getting increased funding, particularly for the Perkins funding, about $40 to $50 million increase each year. So that brought us up to $1.4 billion. Perkins Career and Educational State Grants. They provide learners across the U.S. with opportunities to develop skills in pretty much every CTE career cluster, and as well as supporting students in earning certifications. These funds are specifically available to public schools, nonprofit, private schools, correctional institutions that provide career and technical education, as well as some post-secondary institutions that provide this CTE training. The way that our members have gotten involved in the past with Perkins, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that with people who actually know, but in theory, your company can partner with educational institutions to develop effective programs. And that includes getting involved in their state planning and local needs assessment process. And that really determines how much funding your state will get. We have a great website you guys should all take a look at, nrca.net/CTE schools. And through there, you can look, you can find recruitment tools and other helpful resources to help find local institutions that are potentially providing these programs for you to connect with.
And that website again is www.nrca.net/CTE schools. Dwayne, in terms of, you know, expanding a little bit on what Deb was talking with Perkins Grant and WIOA, what's some other information that people listening to this might be interested in knowing?
Yeah. The other key major source of workforce development funding that's available to our industry is, as Deb mentioned, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, WIOA. This is basically legislation that became law in 2014. It provides federal funding to state and local workforce boards with certain parameters, and the funding comes from the federal government but goes to the state and local level. And it basically gives priority to veterans and low-income individuals, but anybody is eligible for WIOA programs if they want to obtain employment-related assistance and get hooked up with employers. There are basically four primary ways that employers can engage. You can hire workers through the American Job Centers, You can serve on local or state workforce investment boards, or WIBs is the acronym there. You can apply for reimbursement to provide work-based training to employees. And finally, you can partner with educational institutions that provide training or participate in certain types of regional partnerships for in-demand industries. And basically, in order to get started in any of those kind of four areas, you have to go to either one of these American Job Centers, where there's about 2,500 of them nationwide, which is where the WIOA programs are basically delivered through. And they provide all types of career and employment related services and training. To find the American Job Center nearest your company, you can go to www.careeronestop.org, or you can just Google American Job Centers and it'll come up, and there's a locator. You can find the nearest one on their website. And also, the other key is workforce investment boards. Probably you can do it at the state level. That takes a little bit more, but you can also do it at the local level. You don't absolutely have to be on the board, but you can be in touch with the board and find out what is available from your state. These programs vary from state to state. And again, you can go to that same website, www.careeronestop.org. You can find your local workforce investment board, and you can find opportunities to get reimbursement for on-the-job training, or partner with educational institutions or other groups of employers in your area that may be doing workforce training. So that's the basic. There's actually much more to it in terms of WIOA, but that's the basic overview.
So it seems like there's a whole lot of different things out here in this grant space that especially small or medium-sized contractors might not necessarily have the bandwidth or any kind of experience with, you know, finding or implementing. So I'd really like to hear from some of our industry folks. Tammy, let's start with you. So your company has benefited from bringing on board some of these grants and using it for workforce development. What's that process like? And what are some of the grants that you guys have been able to access to help your people?
In Florida, we have a Career Source of Florida, and this is the entity that runs through the federal grants come to the state, and then the state funds Career Source of Florida. And that's the agency that we are required to go through to access these grants. The two of the programs that we've been very successful with has been the Florida Incumbent Working Training, which is IWT. And this is a program, it has about $3 million in it this year, that you have to pre-plan. So in other words, any training that you're going to do, whether it's internal training or external training, you fill out a pretty comprehensive grant form. You request how many hours in the program itself, and they will fund you up to a certain amount to actually pay you to train your employees. It can't be used for discs and things like that. It has to be actual physical training. It's a wonderful program. The grant is a little bit cumbersome. It is a little bit challenging to get through, but if you can think ahead, it's a great program. The other one that we really love is on-the-job training, OJT. And this is a program, we need about 2 weeks. The applicant must have no previous experience to roofing. The applicant must be unemployed. If you're a veteran, you get a little extra points. But if you can give a Career Source a couple weeks, they will do an interview with your applicant. If they hit all the right check boxes, then they will pay, they will match up to 50% of that person's salary while they're going through training. And that can be anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks of cooperative dollars that are used. And really what it boils down to is it gives us an opportunity without having as much stress to get that person into their job as quickly as we would normally do if we weren't getting funded. It gives us a little bit more time to pull them out of the field or pull them out of their role and give them more time to learn what they need to do, how they need to do it, a little more time on the company culture, and really getting really comfortable and giving them a springboard for success versus rushing them through. We're all busy, and sometimes we don't have enough time to train the way we'd like to.
Yeah, certainly when you hire a new person, I would imagine that from the managerial side of things, turning that person into an asset as opposed to a burden in the company's bottom line, that turnaround has got to be hugely important and a big part of the reason, I'm guessing, why maintaining and retaining good employees is such a priority across all industries. So in terms of that initial process, Jenny, this is a question for you. When you have someone who's gone through this certified training that's been grant funded, how much of a ease is it on that burden of making sure that someone has the time to become truly an asset before they're expected to just go out onto a site and start running?
So it depends. I mean, mainly we focus on the REOJT grants, right? So it's the Registered Apprenticeship Program grants. We are now looking into getting some grants for IWT as well. But typically, it reduces the ramp up time. So the REOJT grants, because we get refunded for on-the-job training also, typically it takes about 90 days before we can get somebody at a frontline level up to the speed that they need to get to in that particular role.
Got it. And to clarify, what is IWT?
That's the incumbent worker grant that was mentioned earlier. So that one we also use. And again, we're looking to for next year, right, to see what we want to train on. So you do have to prepare for that in advance because it is somewhat of a rigorous process to complete the application for all of these, right? So we do have a designated task force that focuses on making sure that we speed up that process. But we also, that one is for just to upgrade skills on our current staff, that IWT grant.
So all of these grants, we're not only talking about, you know, brand new workers, like workforce development is much larger than, okay, we've just hired someone, how do we train them up? This is about continual development, even for people that have been there for years.
100%. Typically what we do is we annually do a gap analysis, right? So we have a skills matrix that we look at. We understand the proficiency levels in certain areas. Like this year, we're getting prepared to do some additional Microsoft Office training, right? And so we're looking at a specific demographic within the organization. We send out surveys across the business. We have each employee identify their proficiency levels and if there are areas that they'd like to get trained on within the Microsoft suite products, right? And then from there, we start looking at who we're going to train, who we're going to partner with, you know, what are the requirements that we meet within the application process, and then deploy that training across the business. So yeah, for sure. It supports also our retention and engagement across all areas of the business as well. So it's not just new hires coming on board where everybody's like, oh, they're getting trained, but look at us. We also need some additional training on maybe some new systems or programs that the business introduced. What are we going to do about that? So we get some support from CareerSource as well.
Yeah, it really is a three-step process. It's continually recruiting, continually training, and retention is the byproduct of doing those things constantly for all of your employees on the roof and off.
100%. And it also allows us to, you know, getting involved with these grants. And I know that sometimes it seems tedious and people are thinking, do I even have the manpower, right, to get involved in this? But honestly, it does really help on the productivity side, and it helps on the compensation side, right? Like how can we make sure that we're paying the right training wages? And how can we, you know, reach out to other resources to help us support that as a business and provide that to our employees so that we can make it a better experience for them?
Well, here, thanks, Jenny. I'd like to kick it to Sherry Miles, who's the first person that gave me any kind of education on what the grant process is actually like going through it. So, Sherry, we've heard Tammy and we've heard Jenny talk about how long it'll take and that the process can be somewhat cumbersome. What kind of timelines are we actually talking about? And when do the dollars actually start to roll in for people?
Right. Thank you, John. It really depends. I'll start with that caveat. We tapped into the IWT, which we were, Jenny spoke about, the incumbent worker training funding first, because that was an easier lift. And that is Perkins grants, as Dwayne was saying, that goes through your state and then through your local community workforce development board. We made a program for pro certification where we could do the training and have a certificate at the end. So those are the requirements of that. It has to be an incumbent worker. You have to skill them up. You have to show progression in their career path. And it has to have a certain amount of training. And then you have to have a certificate at the end in order to receive reimbursements for those funds. And we've been successful in doing that a couple times, well, three times so far, twice with thermoplastics and once with asphalt shingles. And our guys are really requesting that we get the metal flashings done so that we can have a class. They're really asking for that. And to Deb's point earlier, when she was talking about the different funding avenues from Congress over the years, you know, those are the biggest ones. But our Workforce Development Board also says, hey, we have a bucket of money in WISC, which is Women in Skilled Careers, or we have a bucket of money in WANTU, which is Women in Apprenticeships and Non-Traditional Occupations. If you can find some women to train up, we can give you money and reimburse you. And so those have different rules to them, but they're different ways of finding some money. We have projects that are HUD funded, and they too also have buckets of money that you can skill up your workforce or find workforce within those communities to do the work. So, for instance, we had a job in an area of town. The requirements for the job said you need a certain amount of HUD people from this area to work on this job. We will train them for you. We will get them trained or pay you back for training them. And but anyway, that was part of the RFP process, was to identify some training programs for that particular project to get people in that area skilled up and ready to have a career.
So what I'm hearing is, as much as it is complicated, even to my knowledge, it's even more complicated than that, because there are these state-funded programs and these federally funded programs, and all of this is available, but some similarities that they have in common. One is that there are buckets out there that are accessible to people who want to do workforce development. They all take a long time to apply for. You have to be able to document progression for each of your employees in order to receive reimbursement. How am I doing across the board on those?
You're great. And I would add that some of those requirements, particularly Perkins funding, the IWT funding that we got, the people had to be, if they were male, had to be registered for selective service.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sherry. Before we continue, just going to take a second to remind everyone that this episode of Growing America's Roofing Workforce is brought to you by Denstek Roof Boards. Your roof job from 6 months ago is calling, and it's probably not to say thank you. Remember when they said a cover board didn't matter? That's because building owners don't always think about the battering their rooftops may take over a lifetime. Denstek Roof Boards helps protect against routine foot traffic, future installs like solar panels or HVAC, catastrophic weather events, and fire. Make sure Denstek Roof Board doesn't get value engineered out of your next job. You'll strengthen your rooftops and your client relationships. Visit denstek.com/stopcallbacks for more information. So, going back into our conversation, Tammy, Jenny, I'm really curious what the cultural impact has been at your businesses when you have started to implement these grants. You know, how does that affect how your employees feel about their work?
Thanks, John, for asking. It's it makes people feel, number one, important that we're customizing something for them. The other employees get excited about opportunities for training. I think, as Jenny said, you know, we don't want to just focus on our incoming employees, but we also want to make sure that we're rising the employees who are here, who are committed. One thing at CFS, we are very big about promoting from within. So these training opportunities give, we've had receptionists become project managers. We've had material managers become account managers, estimators. So when we offer these extra things, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's the Edge, all of these programs get everybody excited. But I do want to give a big shout out to Pro Certified. We have special Pro Certified shirts that have big badges on their chests. And the guys really love wearing those shirts. And just a funny story, we were on a job site. One of our crew members had his Pro Certified shirt. The general contractor thought that he was the superintendent, the project manager. So he started talking to the crew member, and the guy, no, it's me. I'm who you should talk to. He goes, oh, I saw his certification. So he had some really proud moment there, like, I'm the one who's knowledgeable. So NRCA, thank you for Pro Certified, but it does make a huge difference.
And I'll be happy to throw in a positive word about ProCert at any given juncture. Pro Certification is NRCA's installer certification program, has it available for numerous different systems. And if you are curious about learning more about how to make your people's Pro Certified installers, feel free to give me an email. It's available on NRCA's website. But Jenny, same question for you. Certainly, if you want to talk about ProCert, go for it. But what are some of the cultural impacts of having some of these funds available to your people?
I mean, for us, again, it's all about the attraction, selection, and retention of high performers, right? So they realize that we're invested in them. It influences our employer brand. It influences our talent brand. We have internal employees that can testify to our commitment to training, right? And all of these resources allow us to execute on this commitment. And so it's almost like it builds trust, right, within the organization and the employees, because during the selection process, we're promising them that they're, you know, we're going to provide all these training opportunities and tools, and then actually making that materialize for them. Builds just this trust that then turns into commitment on the employee side. And it just makes for a great relationship, employer-employee relationship. And we hear so many times from employees like, oh yeah, so many organizations I've worked for say they're going to support my training, but they never really come through at the end, right? But there, and sometimes it has to do with financial, with your financial opportunities within the organization. So exploring these opportunities, actually putting a program in place where you apply for these grants and you're able to get these grants, and then you're able to really walk the talk, right? And build that trust within the employees. We're also huge partners of NRCA and the ProCert program as well. And for us, having all of those resources and making them available to the employees and materializing what we agreed to during the hiring and during the performance reviews just makes a world of difference as it relates to trust and commitment.
Thanks, Jenny. Deb, Dwayne, I'm not sure how many acronyms we're currently up to, but I think it's at least half a dozen. So maybe you guys can, you know, take us through some of the ones that you're familiar with at the federal level and help us unpack, you know, a few of them so we know what to search for when we're trying to find info on them.
Thanks, John. I can first talk about money that was provided under the Inflation Reduction Act, which included a historic investment in climate resiliency, energy efficiency, solar upgrades, production tax credits. While a lot of those incentives were in the form of credits to the homeowner or the building owner itself, there were grants available within those. There was $200 billion provided through 2031 to provide money to states to implement a program to train and educate contractors specifically involved in the installation of home energy efficiency improvements. They can use the funds to reduce the cost of training a contractor, Their current employees provide testing and certification, such as ProCert that Tammy mentioned, and education under this bill. They can partner with nonprofit organizations to develop and implement an existing state program. So good private-public partnership there. We're also tracking $250 million available to convert federal facilities into high-performance green buildings, as well as $2.5 billion to acquire and install low-embodied carbon materials and projects for use in construction for the alteration of government-owned buildings. Those were kind of the big pots of money that were available as part of the climate bill that passed recently. And I can let Duane talk a little bit about the grants available in the infrastructure bill.
Yeah, sure. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that was passed in late 2021 did contain a number of provisions that provide significant funding for energy efficiency programs and resiliency programs. Basically, this funding all goes to the state and local governments. There was also funding for about $25 billion for airports, which goes through the Department of Transportation and the federal contracting process. There was $1 billion that was allocated for resiliency through the Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program, which is through FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And that then goes for funding of resilient building construction to prevent or to sustain buildings during disasters, in particular hurricanes. And then there were a number of programs that where funding goes through the Department of Energy to increase energy efficiency in commercial and residential buildings. And that information, we have provided that information as it has come out through our weekly newsletter. There's no real great clearinghouse for that funding that goes through. Again, it's federal money, kind of like the Perkins and WIOA funding that goes through flows through to the state and local level, in this case for the energy efficiency programs through the Federal Department of Energy. But that is now coming online. It has been a little bit slow in terms of the process of getting that funding out, but we are seeing that funding getting out into the state and local governments.
So if you're trying to find out where you can find information on this, www.epa.gov/inflationreductionact. You can also go to transportation.gov and search for the bipartisan infrastructure law, and then go into grant programs that are available on that site. But you could also just do a search for state grants for workforce development, for construction workforce development, and you'll get a list because there are 50 states and there are going to be 50 different sets of alphabet soup available. But WIOA and Perkins, definitely the two biggest ones at the top of the federal ladder.
And John, so, I would add, if you did want to look up the best way for a contractor to get involved with a state program or to connect with a local entity for Perkins funding and Perkins education, most of the state plans you can find at the Advanced CTE website, so careertech.org. On there, you can actually look up your individual state plan. And in reading that, you can see how your specialties and how your trainings could match with a local state plan in relation to what they're looking for.
And that's a great point to end on, Deb. Thank you very much. So Sherry, Tammy, Jenny, Deb, and Duane, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of Growing America's Roofing Workforce. Right before we go, time for this month's workforce development update. Schools around the country are adding roofing to the list of trades that their students can learn in career and technical education schools. A rough estimate right now is that by the end of 2024, 30 states at least will have schools with roofing students. It's our goal to try to get it in all 50 because, well, all 50 states have buildings with roofs and all 50 states need employees. So if you're interested in finding out if your state is a state that has it available currently, or what you can do if you're in one of the other 20, including Puerto Rico, please contact me, John Espenshade. My email is available on the website, and I'll be happy to help you figure out what some first steps are. And one last thing. In 2024, Roofing will be at ABC's National Craft Championship for the first time as a demo contest. We are going to have four pro-certified thermoplastic installers compete to find out who is potentially the best thermoplastic installer in the United States. Moving forward in 2025 and beyond, the National Craft Championship will serve as a place for people who are involved in a roofing apprenticeship program to demonstrate their skills and say who is the best roofing apprentice in the United States. So plenty of interesting things to look forward to. I'd like to take the time again to thank our esteemed panel for joining us, and see you next month on Growing America's Roofing Workforce. Thank you.